Okay, today's daf is Nun Tet. We're going to start on Nun Chet Amubet, toward about 15 lines from the top. There's two dots there, Tana Rabbanan. Again, for the week, are Le'iloi Nishma Chana Bat Atara, and for the year, and also for the year, Rezel Bat Sara, Le'iloi Nishma Ta. Before Shlemo Tvara Batino, Zavram Shuma Ben Chana, Kermit Batimo, or the Kermit Barach of Frida Chayamalk, Esther Batsipara, Tania Bemirim Chayrut, Yosef Bemachele, Bat Rivka, Rafal Yosho, Falak Bebrachabati, Yantamirim Bat Chana Rachel, Yelmirim Bat Chaya, Rina Chaya Bat Shoshana, Leazar Chayam Vendreza, Yaakov Ben Rosa. Okay, today we're going back to our Sikri Kon. We have another case now where we're going to say it doesn't have the Din of Sikri Kon. So before we go on, we have to remember what is Din Sikri Kon. So there's a few aspects of it, and that's what causes some of the confusion here in understanding this next part. We're going to see there's two different interpretations. But the Sikri Kon is that when a non-Jew comes and seizes property, and when you're scared, the concept is that the guy is scared of this non-Jewish guy who's taking his land. So we can assume out of fear that he was makne the land to the other guy. And therefore, if somebody buys the property from the non-Jew, it's a good sale and the other guy can't take it back. However, we said that for 12 months, the other guy has priority to buy. And we also said that the Beit Din of Rebbe instituted that since the assumption is that you're buying land for less money, because the Sikri Kon is usually selling it for less money because he bought it for less money, or maybe he took it without anyone paying any money, and therefore he sells it for a lower price, and therefore you have to compensate the earlier Baalim if you were to buy this land from him. And that's again, if you were to buy the land is a good sale. And remember, why did we say that? One of the reasons we said it is because people didn't want the land to stay in the hands of the Goyim. In the original law, the original buyer could seize the property from the buyer. But now they instituted, and then therefore nobody wanted to buy the land. So what did they say? They said the new buyer can buy the land from the Sikri Kon. It's a good sale. However, number one, the other guy has priority if he can buy it for 12 months. After 12 months, he has no priority anymore. And number two, when he does buy it, he has to give the original, assuming he's buying, the assumption is he's buying it for a lower price, and therefore he has to give the original owner a quarter. Okay, we're going to see a quarter of what exactly? Machloket about it. Okay, so now we're going to have two cases where there is no Din of Sikri Kon, and what that means, there is no Din of Sikri Kon, is going to be a bit of a debate here. Tana Rabbanan, Haba Machmat Chof. What if a non-Jew seizes your property because you owed him money? Umachmat Anparut. Okay, now Anparut is translated in a few different ways. Okay, one translation is that he just took it for no absolute reason whatsoever, which is a little problematic because that sounds somewhat like the Sikri Kon. And then you'd have to say the difference here is that you're not scared of the guy. He happened to seize it, but it's not like you have this fear of him like you do of the Sikri Kon. Okay, weak. Okay, each perush is somewhat weak here. The other option is that you actually owed him money. Maybe it was from damages or something else. Then how is it different so much from a chov? That's another weakness on that one. Okay, but maybe it has to do with somehow you owe money for something, for damages you did or something like that, rather than a chov, which seems more like you owed him money from a loan. Okay, so if he seizes it for those reasons, ein bo mishum sikri kon. And another thing is you have to wait 12 months before you can buy it, okay, which we're going to reject in a minute because that doesn't make so much sense. But first, we have to understand what does it mean, ein bo din sikri kon? Okay, so one answer is that one of the things, we learned two things about the sikri kon. One is that the original owner can't take back the land, right, because we're going to assume the whole issue was we didn't want to leave all this land in non-Jewish hands. In this case, we're going to say, no, that's not the case. The original buyer can actually take back the land. And that could be because, number one, maybe there's no fear of the non-Jew in this case. Like, if he took it because of a chov, so it's not like you're scared of him, right? It's just he took it because of a chov. But you can say that he was never actually makneh the field to the other guy. Because he just has said, okay, well, I'm going to eventually pay him back and I'm going to get my field back. In which case, there was never a kinyan in the first place. And therefore, you can't buy it from this guy who actually doesn't own the property halachically. That's one way of saying it. The other option is to say, no, it's the opposite. It was actually totally properly sold to him because it was because of a chov, right? He owed him money. So if he owed him money, he took the land instead of the loan, in which case the land is 100% his. And then, what's the issue? That in this case, there's no requirement to, first of all, what did we say in the secret cone? The original owner has first dibs. In this case, there's no first dibs rule, okay? He doesn't get first dibs. That was the whole takana of Rebbe. And also, you don't necessarily have to give him the extra quarter, right? That quarter isn't relevant. So there's two different ways of understanding it, which actually come out to total opposites. Each one has issues with the continuation of the sugya. I'm not going to get into all the questions of each opinion, of each way of understanding it, but just know that there are two understandings. So now, wait, how could you say that? Didn't you just say, in which case, you shouldn't have to wait the 12 months, right? That was part of the sikrikon law. So, this is how you should read it. Sikrikon atzma tzricha shetishe yu bechodesh. Okay, in other words, this isn't talking about the amparut. It was a mistake. It's not amparut, you have to wait 12 months. It's saying, there's no din sikrikon. But the real din of sikrikon, you'd have to wait 12 months before you can actually buy the property to make sure the original owner doesn't want to buy it back. Amar of Yosef, naktinan, we've learned, okay, it's passed down, that's really what naktinan is. It's been passed down that ein amparut bevavel. There's no such thing as unseized, as in Babel, okay, it's unclear exactly how to understand this. We'll see in a second. It sounds like he's saying, this doesn't happen in Babel. The people just come and seize land. So they say, what do you mean? Bahaka chazina de'ika. But we see that people actually seize land. What do you mean? It doesn't, right, it doesn't happen. It happens. We've seen it happen. Ela ema, what did he mean? Ein din amparu b'Babel. There's no law of amparut b'Babel, that if this were to happen, someone were to seize your property, we'd say there's no din of sikrikon. My taima, why is that? De'ika be davar, below azil kabil. The difference between the reason why amparut is an exception is because we assume that you can't go to the court because you'll have no claim in the court. Right? If somebody takes, the courts won't listen to you. But since there's a Bei Davar, but since in this case, in Bavel, there's a place where you can go to the court and you can go and say, this guy, now again, this is why I said, it depends how you understand amparut. This obviously works much better if you say, they seized your property for no reason. And then the concept is, well, there's good courts in Bavel, there's a good Gentile court system. You can go to the courts and say, he took my property. It's not like when they talked about in the Roman times, where the Roman seized your property, you try to go to a Roman court, they wouldn't listen to you. But in Babel, you try to go to court, and they would basically say, you're right, this guy took your property, and you should get it back. And therefore, if you didn't go to the court, below azul kabil, ema achule achil. So we must assume that in Babel, if someone came, took your property, and you didn't start arguing about it, then you must have been mochel, and therefore it is a good sale. And therefore, we don't say this din of amparut bavel that we think it's not a good sale. In other words, again, it all depends on how you read this sugya about what it means to have amparut. Okay, but this would hold that amparut normally is not a good sale in that case, and in this case, we're saying it is a good sale because since you could have, this all goes back to what we saw yesterday, it's all a matter of what you could have done and didn't do, right? It's the same thing as having a chazaka 3 years on the land. If you were in the land for 3 years and nobody argued and complained, well, then it must be it's yours. What are they coming after 3 years and complaining? It doesn't mean anything. So here also, if you had the time to go to the court and you didn't go to the court, it must mean you weren't ever planning to get this land back, in which case you really were machne the land to the guy, in which case the buyer can buy it wholeheartedly, you know, it's his. Okay, now we're going to have a situation, Gidol Bari Eli, we actually saw him on Daf Lamed Dalid with Giloy Milta Beget. Do you remember the guy who sends the get to his wife and then threw a shaliach and the wife was weaving, she was embroidering, and she said, oh, come back tomorrow. And then the shaliach goes back to him and says, yeah, she said, come back tomorrow. And he says, oh, Baruch HaTov HaMetiv, I'm so glad. And then the whole question was, did he mean to be Mevatel the get when he said that? Or did, you know, can we assume that Giloy Milta is enough? Or since he didn't say, I'm a Vatel the get, we don't accept it as a Bitul get. So now we have another story with him. He seems to get himself into tricky situations. Kabil Ara Bataska Mibnei Baga. Okay, there were people who lived in this valley. They each shared a part of the property. What happened? Some of the people abandoned the land, and they weren't there.
Now, they had to pay taxes on the entire area jointly. So everybody gave part of the money. Now, what happened? Some people abandoned the property and weren't there to pay their share of the taxes. So the people in the valley who lived there had to pay more than their share. So what did they do? They sold the property to Gidel Bar Eli, but they didn't really sell it to him. They said, take this property that was abandoned, live in it, and pay the taxes, their share of the taxes. That's all you have to do, right? As long as you pay their share of the taxes, we're happy to have you live here because you'll pay their taxes, and then we don't have to pay the taxes. So that's what it means. He got the land, bitaska, taxes, the tax, mibnei baga, from the people of the valley. Atim biyav zuze titlachnim. He pays up front. Maybe he was so appreciative that they were letting him live here, right? That he pays up front 3 years. It was almost like his way of making a kinyan on the property. Okay, you see again the 3 years, almost like the chazaka, right? He plans to be there for 3 years for the long term. Lisof, atam ravata kamai. The original owners show up on the scene, okay? So after a year, basically. So amrule, shata kamaita diyavit achalta. The first year you gave your taxes for, you already ate the proceeds of that. It's been a year. But hashta, but now, anan yahavinan and anan achlinan. Okay, now we're going to pay the tax and we're going to sit on this property. In other words, they want their land back. So the whole question was it a good kinyan or not? Now, it's very similar to the Sikri Kohen because did they have rights to sell him this land, so to speak, right? And then he also kind of purchased it by paying up ahead, by paying in advance, giving an advance payment of 3 years. Atu l'kamei de Rav Papa. So they go in front of Rav Papa. Right? You see how he gets himself in another situation, which is unclear, just like with this Baruch HaTov HaNitiv. It's interesting. Atu l'kamei de Rav Papa. They go in front of Rav Papa. Savar l'michtav le'tirfa abnei baga. He wanted to write them a... wait a minute. This tirfa is... a collect... wait, that...
Does he just want compensation for the 2 years he prepaid, or does he have a claim on the land?
Right, so, right, it's a good question.
He thinks he has the land.
Right, he wants to have the land because he paid the money for it.
He paid the tax, so why
right, plus it's, he'd rather get the land because he really didn't pay any money for the land, so...
He gets the land for free.
Right, he gets the land for free anyway. Okay, so he wanted to... Right, so he wanted to write a document... To allow the guy ownership, right? To allow Gidel Bar Eli ownership of this valley.
Or just to collect the money that he paid the other 2 years.
Or to collect the money that he, or the tax, to get the tax back?
To collect his loss from the residents of the valley.
Uh-huh. But why the residents of the valley?
Because it was a joint fund and all of them therefore were benefiting from the fact that...
I see. So he wants to get the money back from the taxes. So that's what Rav Papa wanted to do. Amale Rav Huna Breit Rav Yeshua Le Rav Papa Im Kain Asita Sikri Kohen. You're making like a din of a Sikri Kohen here because you're saying that he had a good, that we allow his sale to be a good sale when the people never really intended to be machne the field. El Amar Rav Huna Breit Rav Yeshua Hiniach Ma'otav Al Keren HaTzvi. We've learned this before. It's like putting your money on. You know, he took a gamble. He knew he was taking a gamble. So therefore, he doesn't get anything. It was like putting your money on the horns of the tzvi. Obviously, if you put your money there, what's going to happen? The tzvi moves all the time, right? He's going to run off, and your money's going to go flying. So basically, he should have known that this was a shaky deal, and he knew that from the beginning, and therefore, there's no real loss for him. Okay, zo mishnah rishona. Now we're going back to the mishnah, and we're going to talk about this revia. Beitin shel achareihem amru, right? The later beitin said, Halokach min ha-sikri kohen noten le-baalim revia. You have to give a quarter. Amar Rav, revia bakarka o revia b'maot. Rav says you can either give a quarter of the value of the land. You can give him a quarter of the land that you took. Okay, in other words, right, you have to give the original owner a quarter of the land. Okay, so let's say the land's worth 100, right? 1 second. Wait a minute.
Actual land?
Right. You give him either a quarter, right, a quarter of the actual land or a quarter of the money that you spent on the property. Okay? So, we're going to see this in a minute, how this works. Okay? Shmuel says, you're going to give revia bekarka, you give a quarter of the land, Shehen shlish b'ma'ot. He says it's a third of what you paid, not a quarter of what you paid. Okay? B'may kamif legay. Mar savar nechi revi azavin. Okay? Shmuel says, okay, now this is a little bit of a difference in reality. What was the general price that the Sikri Kohen sold it for? So assume it was worth 100. So Shmuel says that the Sikri Kohen would sell it for 75. So then Shmuel says, you're going to pay him a third of what you bought it for, right? Which is 25, okay? And then Rav says, Umar Sabar Nechi Chum Shazavin. You actually, the Sikri Kohen would sell it for a fifth less, so 20% less, which is going to be 80, okay? He sells it for 80, in which case, when you give him a quarter, you're going to give him 20, okay? So that's the machloket between them. Is it you pay a quarter of what you spent or a third of what you spent? Okay, that's the machloket. So now we have a meitivah, but if you notice, the wording is very different of Rav and Shmuel. It's not parallel. Rav says, Revia Bekarka, O Revia Bemaot. And Shmuel says, Revia Bekarka, Shehen Shlish Bemaot. So now we're going to have a braita that uses the exact same Lashon of Rav. Now you can obviously explain it like Shmuel, but the Gemara first raises it as a question on Rav, saying, the way Rav says it doesn't seem, the way the braita says it seems just like Rav and not like Shmuel. Meitive. Here's a braita that seems to say the same thing, but now we're going to see a little bit different words in our Mishnah. Zomi is going to elaborate more than our Mishnah. Zomishna rishona, beijin shalachareihem amru, halokech menas sikriko, noten lebalim revia, v'yad ba'alim al ha'elyona. Okay, so now the ba'alim get to decide what they want, how they want to get their money, the original owner. Ratzu b'karka notzlim, ratzu b'ma'ot notzlim. So what does this sound like? It sounds like obikarka obimaot, okay? So they have the upper hand that they can decide whether they want to get the land or the maot, which seems, now, you can very easily explain this like Shmuel, but they say because the wording gives the option, obimaot, obikarka, that sounds very much like Rav. Ematai, when does this work? Bizman she'en biyadan likach. That's only if the owners can't buy it themselves. Aval yesh biyadan likach, this is not having to do with our issue, but this is, right, we learned this already. Aval yesh biyadan likach, hen kodmin lekol adam. But if they can actually buy it themselves, then they get first dibs. Rebbe hoshiv beitin, and then we get to, again, this beitin of Rebbe. Binimnu she'im sha'ata b'pnei sikri kohen 12 chodesh, kol hakodem likach zachad. There's only 12 months for him to get first dibs. After the 12 months pass, he doesn't anymore. Aval notan lebalim revia bakarka or revia b'mao. But still he gives, and here's again the Lashon, and this is really like Rav, he gives revia bakarka or revia b'mao, and this is why it seems to be like Rav. So Amar Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi explains, how can we understand this like Shmuel also? Kitan yahihi la'achar shabao ma'ot liyado. They're saying he can either get the karka or the ma'ot, but this is after the ma'ot, or in other words, it's all a matter of just how you define, how you calculated the ma'ot. In other words, still, you could still say that revia means a shlish of what you spent, or a revia of, you know, or a revia of what you spent. Now, you could explain it both like Rav or like Shmuel. It doesn't necessarily prove like one or the other. Amar Rav. Ana have been, now we get into a whole, until we get to the next Mishnah, it's a whole sidetrack about Rebbe. Amar Rav. If you remember, Rav lived in the generation, right, when the Mishnah, okay, Rebbe put together the Mishnah, Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, he's called Rebbe. Rav was his Talmid, and he was in the crossover generation, so he also was around in Rebbe's time. So Ana Have B'Minyana Debe Rebbe. I was there when they took the, you know, they took the vote on this issue in the Beit Din of Rebbe. Uminai Dide Manu Beresha, and they asked my opinion about this first. Okay, why is it relevant whether they asked my opinion first or last? So first of all, they immediately jump on him and they say, "Wait a minute, V'ha Anan Snan, didn't we learn in a Mishnah?" Dinei mamono b'hataro b'atumo matchilim min hagadol, v'dinei nefasho matchilim min hatzad. There's a rule about who starts when you have the discussion, right? If you think the best thing we can relate to about this is a jury, right? A court by jury. So what does the jury do? They sit and discuss. Now, if the most convincing person starts out, what's going to happen? He's going to convince everyone of his opinion right away, right? So if you ask the smartest person in the room, right, there's advantages and disadvantages to that. So what do they say in halacha? Well, when it comes to dina nefasho, we want to make sure that everybody, that we really have very clear, you know, that there's no bias or anything else. So we're going to start with the lowest guy first and work our way up. But when it comes to dina mamono, which we're not as concerned that there's going to be some whatever, we'll start with the smartest guy first, you know, the most important. Let him speak. And then if anyone has something different to say, someone will say something different. Only in dina nefasha, where we're so concerned that we've, you know, checked every single corner and every single everything, we're going to start from the lower. So therefore, this is dina mamono, right? And what should you say about dina mamono? They shouldn't have started with Rav. Right, Rav might be the greatest emora, but certainly among the Tanaim, he wasn't at the top. So how could it be they started with him? So Amar Rava Bereja Rava, Itamar of Hila Bereja Rav Valas, Shani Minya, it's a very strange name, right? Rabbi Valas, how often do you hear that name? It doesn't sound like a typical Gemara name. Shani Minyana de Be Rebbe, de Kulu Minyana Minatzad Havu Matchilin. The Beit Din of Rebbe had different rules. Every single diyun started from the tzad, and the assumption here being is that Rebbe was such a powerful and convincing figure that it was unfair in any situation to start with him. Ba'amar Rabba Bereja Rabba, Ba'itamar Abhila Bereja Ravalas, Mi'emot Moshe Ba'ad Rebbe, Lo Matzinu Torah Ugrula B'makom Echad. Okay? From the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the time of Rebbe Yehuda HaNasih, we didn't have a person like Rebbe, who had both amazing knowledge of Torah and greatness in the world in general. He was so very well respected. He had friends among the non-Jewish leaders, and he had basically, and also wealth, he had everything. So first, now they're going to start asking questions. What about this one? What about that one? Okay? The Lo Havi Yoshua. So that, now, what they want to try to prove here is that he was... You know, to be great, you have to be... If you're great among a bunch of great people, that doesn't make you great. Great means you're distinguished, you're the only one. Right, Noach Hayat Tzadik V'dorotav, okay? So now they say, well, there was Yoshua, but no, Hava Elazar. Elazar was also around then, and he was almost at the same level as Yoshua, so Yoshua didn't stand out in such a great manner. So then they say... What about Hava Elazar? But once Yoshua died, Elazar was on his own. So they say, no, Hava Pinchas. Hava Pinchas. What about Pinchas once Elazar died? Hava Zkenim. Hava Shaul. What about Shaul HaMelech? He was, you know, Shichmo V'mala, right? So they say, no, Hava Shmuel. V'ha Nach Nafshe. Okay, but didn't he die at some point and Shaul was on his own then? Now all of a sudden they give, now that they don't have that excuse, what do they say? They say, oh no, they're talking about someone who was great all of his life, that there was no one in any period of his lifetime that was great like him. So even if maybe for 10 years of his life or whatever it might be, he was great by himself, you know, we were looking for someone who was the whole time, which is now the answer we're going to give to all these other people. Vahahava David. Say no, Hava Ira Hayairi. Okay, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy. I never heard of him either. But he's some guy who was known to be Rashi says he was Gadol B'Torah. He comes up in Moed Katan, I don't remember. He would teach the rabbis on Karim, on pillows and stuff and blankets. Okay? V'hanach nafshe, but didn't he die at some point? Oh no, kulesh nebi'ina. We need someone who all of his life was like that. Ha hava Shlomo. What about Shlomo HaMelech? Have a Shimi ben Gera. It was Shimi ben Gera. He was a Tamil Chacham. Vaha Katle. Didn't they kill him? Oh no, Kulishne Kamrina. We need someone who was for the whole life of Shlomo. Obviously, you could have also said David, right?
So there's no teachers around to teach these great guys.
Right. How did they become so great if there was no great teacher? Right. So some people can get there on their own. Haha, Chizkiah. What about Chizkiah? Okay. Oh, wait. Chizkiah. He's already much later, right? We're already far away from these guys. Oh no, Hava Shevna. There was Shevna HaSofer. He was great. Ha Iktal, but wasn't he killed? Oh no, Kulishne Kamrina. We need his whole life. Ha Hava Ezra. Hava Nechemya Ben Chachalya. Amar Rav Acha Bereja Rava. Af Ani Omer. Miyamot Rebbe Va'ad Rav Ashi. Lo Matzinu Torah Gdula B'Makom Echad. Okay, now what's he pointing out? From Rebbe to Rav Ashi now. In other words, what are they really getting at? There's Moshe. He wrote the Torah. There's Rebbe, he wrote the Mishnah, and there's Rav Ashi, who is attributed to writing the Gemara. So they're trying to show these are the three greatest, you know, moments in Jewish history, right? These people made everything happen. They are at the top. Okay, so he's saying from Rebbe to Rav Ashi, we haven't seen anyone either. Velo, Vaha Vahuna Barnatan, what about him? Okay, I don't know why specifically him out of everybody else. Shani Huna Barnatan, Demecha Havachayef Leila Rav Ashi. He took over for Rav Ashi, I think. I think that was the issue. He took over after Rav Ashi. They say he was, though, under. Okay, he was under Rav Ashi. Like, he had to report to him, so to speak. Okay, interesting discussion. But again, I think what this is really getting at is the writing of the books, that was the real critical thing going on here. Okay, new Mishnah. Cheresh, Romez, Vinirmaz. Okay, we know about a Cheresh and a Katan, which we're going to relate to later in the Mishnah, that their Kinyanim are not good Kinyanim. Okay, now that creates problems because, you know, sometimes they do need to acquire things. So what did they say? If a Cheresh is Romez, he uses his hands or signals to kind of show what he wants. So it works. And if someone is Romez to him, they say, by the way, with their hands, Rashi says, or with his head. Okay, he can make indicators that he wants to buy something, or someone can indicate to him using gestures. It works. Uben betera omer kofetz v'nikpatz. If you use your mouth, okay, you make simanim with your mouth. Now, there's a whole machloket here, which is a very interesting machloket as to which one is stronger. Is it stronger to be kofetz v'nikpatz? Okay, is that a stronger way of doing it, using your mouth? Just one second, I want to check one thing. Something here. Right, that's it. There's a machloket about what kofetz v'nikpatz is. Rashi says kofetz v'nikpatz is using your mouth. You're making, you know, mouthing something. Is that enough? A different interpretation, though, that's given is that you actually pass over the property to the other person. Okay, without any gesture, let's say, but you give him the physical item, and maybe that's an indicator. So according to that, that would seem a stronger than just a rimiza, right? According to the fact that it's using your mouth, it might be a weaker one. So there's a machloket about... What? So wait, so now we're going to say, kofetz v'nikpatz b'metaltalin, okay? That works when it comes to metaltalin, but not with property. That's why it could be also that we're talking about actually handing something over, because you obviously can't do that when it comes to karka. Okay, well, there's going to be a discussion in the Gemara about this metaltalin here. Hapi'utot, okay, children, young children, mikhan mekach, umimkaram memkar b'metaltalin. They can also do buying and selling with metaltalin. We're going to see soon what kind of pi'utot are we talking about, what age. I'm Rav Nachman. Again, these are all tikkun olam. These are things that mikara din don't work, but mishum tikkun olam, they said they will work. I'm Rav Nachman. Machloket b'metaltalin. This machloket between Ben Betera and Tanakama is only when it comes to metaltalin. Aval begitin divrei hakol b'remiza. Everyone agrees that a get can work with remiza. Okay, this would support the opinion that remiza is a better way of doing it than the kvitza. So then they say, pshita. Obviously that's the case, because b'metaltalin t'nan. It says, you can only be kofetz v'nikpatz b'metaltalin, right? Which seems that you couldn't do it begitin. So now they say, ma'u detema af b'metaltalin. Maybe they meant even b'metaltalin. Okay, which means that begitin and even b'metaltalin, this would work. Ka mashmalan. That's why, so that you don't think it says af, that it means even metaltalin, they have to specifically tell you. Now, there's the whole question was, why do Rav Nachman say machloka b'metaltalin v'gitin lo when it's obvious from the Mishnah? So he's saying it's not necessarily obvious because you might be able to read Ben Betera as saying kofetz v'nikpatz af b'metaltalin. Now there's going to be an Ika d'Amri which is going to read this the opposite way. Ika d'Amri Amr Rav Nachman ki machloka b'metaltalin kach machloka b'gitin. Just like they argue in metaltalin, they also argue b'gitin, meaning that Ben Betera thinks you could do kofetz v'nikpatz even begitin. So then they say, b'hanan b'metaltalin t'nan. Doesn't it say only b'metaltalin? So they say, oh no, ema, it should read af b'metaltalin. He meant even metaltalin, but obviously also gitin. Okay, so two different approaches of how to read this. Ha-pi'utot mekhan mekach, u'minkaram memkar b'metaltalin. V'ad kama machvei, ad kama, for until what age? Mechave Rav Nachman l'Rav Yitzchak b'rei. Rav Yehuda points to Rav Yitzchak, his son. Mechave is he indicated. He indicated his son Kibar sheet, kibar shev. What?
Going back to gestures.
Right, gestures. Yafeh. Okay, so what does he say? Like my son, who's about 6 or 7. Okay, now you can assume his son was probably a pretty smart kid, right? If he was so smart, often his son is pretty smart. So now we're going to see Rav Kahana Amar, kibar shev, kibar timne. 7 or 8. B'matnita tana, kibar tesha, kibar eser. 9 or 10. Okay, below pligi, and there's really no machloka between all these sources. Kol cha v'cha lefi chorfe. Each kid according to his level, right? We all know that there's a big difference between some 6-year-olds and some other 6-year-olds, right? And there's some 10-year-olds that are not as smart. And here, what's interesting is there's a machloket in the psikat halacha. According to all these sources, it sounds like what? Ages 6 to 10 is questionable, depends on the child. Once they're 10, it seems like everybody's okay with 10, because 10 is included in all these sources. But there's a machloket whether we pass in that way lahalacha, or even it, do we assume 10-year-olds and up are totally fine, and their mekach is already a mekach, because a 10-year-old can already have enough intelligence to do that. This, by the way, goes with the theory that, I don't know how much we related to this, I'm sure we did at some point, but din chinuch in the Gemara is not like din chinuch nowadays, where we say, oh, bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah. Oh, by the way, some of the sources say when each one gives 2 ages, one is for girls, one is for boys, because girls are always more mature than boys, they mature younger. So that's one thing, which, you know, obviously corresponds to the bat mitzvah, bar mitzvah. But in the Mishnah, certainly, and even in the Gemara, it was more like there were different ages for a different mitzvah, right? Depending on what it is, if you've reached you can already do that particular mitzvah, then you're already chayav. So here, it's also an indicator of that. And the machloka between the mafreshim is, do we assume 10 is already the age, or even after 10, we still check? Does the kid really have an understanding or not? Obviously, it's going to be somewhat subjective. How do you figure out whether the kid really understands what he's doing or not? Right? This reminds me of, you know, when the kids trade klafim and stuff, and then, you know, they get into a whole big fight with their friend about, you know, oh, I didn't really mean to give you that, right? Because do they really understand the concept that if they flip cards and give the other kid wins, are they never going to see that card again, right? So you can see the age of maturity when they have a concept that if I give my card, right, if I flip cards and I lose it, I understand that I will never see this again. This
also
will not be mine.
Custody disputes, this is a big issue. Like, when is a child old enough to take the stand? And
to make their own decision, you're saying, about custody issues.
How influential is a child's opinion about where he wants to be? And over a certain age, particularly like with international custody disputes, a child's opinion can be quite...
So what's the age that they say for custody issues usually? It's a machloket.
Like
it depends on the child, or it
depends
on the age.
Child,
okay, they
but
do that.
Generally over 9 or 10.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it'll be written in statutes. I mean, in Israel, it's like 9 or 10.
Okay,
but I know cases where they listen to the kid at 7 and 8 too.
Interesting. Okay, so what Pam's saying is in custody battles, just so you hear on the tape, the custody battles often the courts take into consideration the child depending on their age and whether they're either
maturity
in certain cases, right, depending on the maturity of the child, sometimes the age of the child, and 9 or 10 is often the cutoff, but it depends on the situation. So very much like this.
Yeah.
Okay. V'tamamai. Now, what's the reason for this? Why do we allow children's kinyan to be a kinyan? Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Kedei Chayav. There's certain situations where kids have to buy things to fend for themselves. They need food. So if you can't let him purchase food, right, then how is he going to survive? Now this, some of the Mefreshim say, well then, what does it become clear? This only works in a case where there's no real apitropos for the kid. And the kid's kind of on his own. Okay, it reminds me when I traveled to the Far East, you see these little kids working and doing things, you know, sometimes they have to fend for themselves at a young age. So, and there's nobody really taking care of them, or the parents just, you know, aren't available and they send the kids off to do all sorts of things. So it could be that if there is an apitropos then who takes care of him, he doesn't need it mishum kedei chayav, then his mekach is nigu mekach. And also, it seems like according to this, he can only do purchases that have to do with his survival. But things that don't have to do with his survival, maybe he can't. So again, there's debates about how far we take this. But now we're getting into, okay, this last line to understand the reason. We quote Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Now we're going to see another statement of his having nothing to do with this. Vayomer la'asher al hamiltacha. Hotzei levush l'chol avdei ha'baal. Okay, this is Yehu the king. He wants to get the nevi'ei ha'baal. So what does he say? He says, say to the person in charge of the miltacha, which is the wardrobe, take out clothes for all the Ovdei Baal, and then he's got this plan to do away with them. Anyway, they want to say now, my miltacha, what is this word? Where does it come from? I'm Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, davar hanimlal v'nimtach. It's things that can be stretched. Okay, that's closed, right? When you fold them up, they're very small, but when you stretch them out, they get much bigger. Ki ata Rav Dimi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. So now we're going to see all sorts of clothing that they're going to talk about that's like this. Shigir lo bonyam ben nunyam l'rebi. Okay, Bonyam ben Nunyam, interesting name, sent to Rebbe, Sivne v'chomas v'silsala u'milmala, four different types of fine linens. Sivne v'chomus ka'amguza u'palga da'amguza, it folds up so small to the size of a nut and a half. Salsala u'milmala kipistaka u'palga dipistaka, like a pistachio and a half, okay? So these are each very fine linens that... They come from this word, okay, my milmala. Where does the word milmala come from? Davar hanimlal v'nimtach, okay? It's something that can be stretched out and, how do they translate
rolled.
It can be rolled and stretched out. In other words, it can be rolled up very small and can be stretched out very big. Okay. Fine. That was a very side issue. Now back to our issue. V'ta'utan ad kama. Okay, good question. Why they bring up this? I don't have a good answer to it. V'ta'utan ad kama. When a kata does a kinyan... Okay, now we have this concept of ona'a. What is ona'a? If you sell something for more than a sixth of its value or less than a sixth of its value, the owner, the person who sold it later could come and say, oh, that's not a good sale. Okay, so now does the katan have the same amount of room for error? Am Rabbi Yonah, Am Rabbi Zera, ad shtot ki gadol. It's the same thing, until a sixth, just like a gadol. Ba'a, ba'a. Ba'a now asks another question. If he can do a kinyan, so what about his matana? Right, if he can sell something and buy something, what if he gives someone a gift? Right, say it like the klafim almost, right? Let's say he says to his friend, I'm going to give you my klafim, my cards, okay? So now, does that count as a gift? Or what if he says tomorrow, oh, I didn't really mean to give it to you for good. You know, does it work or not? Matanatomai. So Rav Yemar Amar, e matanato matana. Doesn't work. Mar Rav Ashi Amar, matanato matana. It does work. So now, afchua, they flip the shito by accident. And they said that Mar Bar of Ashi said it's not a good matana, and Rav Yemar said it is a good matana. V'shadur l'kamei de Rav Mordechai, and they brought these two opinions in the opposite in front of Rav Mordechai. Amar Le, zilu amru lebar Mar, go speak to the son of Mar Bar of Ashi. Lav hava uvda ki avakai Mar chag karya ara v'chag karya darga. By the way, I think they were trying to...
Mar, the son of Rav Ashi.
Right, Mar, the son of Rav Ashi. Okay, even though, they were said in the name of Mar, the son of Rav Ashi, the matana. Now they're going to say, when we were with Mar, the son of Rav Ashi, he had 1 foot on the ground and 1 foot on the step. I'm not sure why exactly they're telling us this information. V'amar nale, and we said to him, matanatomai, what's the matana of a katan? V'amar la matanatomatana. Okay, so therefore they're trying to say, right, that clearly he thought it was a good matana. Achat matana tshchiv mera v'achat matana bari. Achat matana murva v'achat matana mu'etet. Okay, that's what he told us. Whether it's big, small, whether he was on his deathbed or wasn't on his deathbed, a katan's matana is considered a matana. Okay, new list of items. Darkei shalom. Eilu dvarim amru mipnei darkei shalom. By the way, we're moving here from tikkun olam to darkei shalom. Okay, they're similar, some differences. What is this Mishum Darkei Shalom? Okay, this is going to be because we don't want sichsuchim between people. We don't want people to have fights about things. We're going to talk about kavod. Okay, we're going to learn about the order of the aliyot. Okay, who gets the first aliyah, the second aliyah. It's all so that people don't fight about who gets the first aliyah, who gets the second, who's more respected in the shul, who's not. Okay, you can write this. Reminds us of the beginning of Yoma with the fighting over who gets to, you know, when they killed the guy trying to run up the ramp to the mizbech. For the pious. Eilu dvarim amru mipnei darkei shalom. Kohen korei rishon, v'acharav Levi, v'acharav Yisrael. Mipnei darkei shalom, which is very interesting in light of, we had this whole thing about the negatives about the hierarchical society, and here yet there's always that balance between, on the one hand, you know, not wanting to create these rifts between people. On the other hand, there is sort of this hierarchy in society.
Or hierarchy to prevent the rifts, because if you have a clear hierarchy...
Right, that's also true. If you have a clear hierarchy, then you can somewhat prevent the rifts. Yes. Right, and here it's also not based on wealth, like the earlier stories were somewhat based on the wealth and the...
Hierarchy.
Exactly, it can be simpler. Okay. Mipnei Darkei Shalom. Marvim Bibayik Yashan Mipnei Darkei Shalom. That's if someone always had the Erev. What's an Erev? An Erev Chatzerot. In order to allow the people to who shared a common courtyard to eat, to carry between, they would put food in one person's property. So if they generally put it in one person's house, then we keep it going in their house. Borshu Karov La Amam Et Malei Rishon. Okay, here you have a cistern in the city. So the person who has the boar closest to the cistern, he gets to fill it up first. Okay, again, just so that we have an order. Otherwise, if it's a random order, then everybody will fight over it. Mitzudot Chayava Ofot V'Dagim. Let's say you set up a trap. Okay, now you're not standing there the whole time. You leave it, right? Let's say you leave a trap out for the animals. You actually don't own what falls into that trap just because the trap is yours. You have to actually make a kinyan on that animal. So in theory, anyone could come by and take anything that your trap captured. But they instituted the yesh b'hem mishum gezel mipnei darkei shalom. But we institute that it really does belong to you, even though technically speaking it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to you so that no one takes your stuff and you don't get angry at them. Rabbi Yossi omer gezel gamur. Rabbi Yossi says this is actual gezel. This isn't even darkei shalom. Mitziat cheresh shotev et katan. Yesh behem mishum gezel mipnei darkei shalom. Again, Rabbi Yossi omer gezel gamur. If a cheresh shoter katan, who we said can't have a kinyan, and they find a lost item, so they can't actually acquire it. Now, what are we worried about, right? In general, what happens with a katan? He finds something, and someone grabs it from him and says, this isn't yours, you're a katan, you have no rights. So the relatives of the katan are going to come out and try to, you know, be there for him, right? And get into a whole fight with the other person. So in order to prevent fights, they said, if he finds something, it belongs to them, okay? Both the cheresh, the shoteh, and the katan. Ani ha-menakef b'rosh ha-zayin. Let's say an ani goes up to the top of a tree and is collecting the zeitim from... my assumption is, I didn't look this up well enough, but my assumption is he's getting to the top stuff that like nobody else was going to pick anymore. It's like a leket kind of thing. They left the very, very top of the tree, right? It's very hard to get there. So he climbs up to the very, very top of the tree, and as he's there, zeitim are dropping. So Masha Taktav doesn't really belong to him because he's an ani, he's in someone else's field. But since he was the one who went up there to pick them, again, we say it's Gezel Mishum Darkei Shalom. Rabbi Yossi Omer Gezel Gamor. Okay, you see he has this approach that these things are really full Gezel. Eimimachim biyad aniyei ovdei kochavim beleket shecha upeam mipnei darkei shalom. Okay, now we're going to start getting into the non-Jewish things. If a non-Jew starts collecting leket shecha upeam, we don't stop him and say, oh, this is for Jews, because obviously, right, that's going to create tension. Okay. Now we're going back to the first thing, the Kohen and the Levi. Minan emile, where do we learn this from? Amar of Matna de Amar Kra, vayichtov Moshe ta Torah azot, vayitna la Kohenim b'nei Levi. So they say, Atu, by the way, we're going to bring a few psukim that are all going to say the same thing. Atu ana lo yadana de Kohenim b'nei Levi ninu, what, we didn't know that the Kohenim were b'nei Levi, they had to tell us Kohenim b'nei Levi. Ela, what's it coming to teach you? Kohen b'resha b'hadr Levi. Because it says Kohanim, and then it says B'nai Levi, so the Kohanim go first, and the Levi go second. Rabbi Yitzchak Naftali brings a different proof, Pasuk. Mehacha. B'nikshua Kohanim B'nai Levi. Again, the same concept. Atu anu lo yadina et Kohanim B'nai Levi ninu, ela Kohen B'resha v'hadro Levi. Rav Ashi Amar Mehacha. Rav Ashi learns from a different type of Pasuk here. B'nai Amram Aharon Moshe, who are all Levim, right, because Amram's Levi. Vayavdel Aharon lahakdisho kodesh kodashim. So what do you see? He was separated to be the, right, the kodesh kodashim, so he's obviously in a higher level. Vikidashto. There's a different pasuk about the Kohanim that says vikidashto. So now they say, what does that mean, vikidashto? L'chol davar shebikdushan. In other words, they get to be the first of everything. Tana de Rabbi Yishmael, Bekidashto, L'chol davar shebikdusha. So what does that include? Liftoach Rishon, okay, to open the, right, what is the Liftoach? I assume means to open the Aron, or?
The assemblage with the first address.
What?
To open everything.
Oh, right, right. He's the first to speak.
Invocation.
Okay, he's always the first to speak. Ulevarech Rishon, when it comes to Berkat HaMazon, this is where we get that the Kohen leads the Zimun, if there's a Kohen there. Vilito Manah Yafeh Rishon. Okay, he gets the first Maneh. Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef. Mipnei Darkei Shalom De'oraiti. What do you mean? This all comes from the Pesukim. It's De'oraita. Why do you say it's Mipnei Darkei Shalom? So Amalei, it is. It's De'oraita. Mipnei Darkei Shalom. We saw this before, right? That sometimes you have Halacha De'oraita, but they explain that the reason for the Halacha De'oraita is Mipnei Darkei Shalom. And that goes to what Pam was saying before, which is if you institute a hierarchy that's very clear, then it will make more peace in general. So then they ask, what do you mean? Kol haTorah kula nami mipnei darkei shalom. Udichtiv, derachea darkeinu am b'chol nitivotea shalom. The whole Torah is darkei shalom, so it doesn't mean anything to say, you wouldn't say every single thing is darkei shalom, but really it is all darkei shalom. So that doesn't make any sense. So el amar abaye l'chidimar. This darkei shalom comes to teach us what Mar says. Ditanya, Mar is, you know, what so-and-so said. Shnayim mamtinim ze leze bekara, shlosha ein mamtinim. Babotzea, hu poshet yado tchila, bim balach lo kavod lerabo, o lemisha gadol mimenu harishut biyado. Okay, so first we have a braita. The two people, if two people are eating, they have to wait for the other one to start eating. But shlosha already, ein mamtinim, you don't have to wait. This is like table manners, right? Okay, if there's three people, then you don't have to wait. Habotzea, hu poshet yado tchila, he's the first one to eat, okay? When you make a motzi, he's the first one to eat. Again, so that you don't, right, who everyone gets upset, oh, he didn't give me first. But if he wants to give kavod l'rabo, or someone who's gadol mimenu, he can give them first. Va'amar Mar, and Mar said about this, Allah, on this, lo shanu ela b'si'uda, ava b'beit ha'kneset lo, da'atu lin suye. This only works that you can give it l'misha gadol mimenu in a si'uda. But when it comes to shul and aliyot, that's going to cause, like, people are going to fight about that. When it comes to the table, people aren't going to get upset. But, right, you see this a lot. People get very upset about kibudim in shul sometimes, right? There's certain people who are very makpid, and that's what he says. Okay, so, fine, we'll stop here, and we'll pick up with this tomorrow and finish more about the kohen. We're going to learn about, very interestingly, why when there's no levi in shul, the same kohen gets the first two aliyot and not two different kohanim, right? You would think, oh, we'll give another kohen the kibud. Right? When there's no levi in shul, so kohen gets kohen, and then the same kohen gets levi. So tomorrow we'll see why. Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do. Okay. Right, when you're on the women's side, you don't always notice these kind of things.
Oh, I know this.